everyone. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate your coming out for GiveWell Research event. Just so you know, we're going to be recording the event. We're mostly going to be the ones doing the talking, but if you have any questions about that, feel free to come up after us and let us know. We're planning to post the recording and a transcript of this event on our website for folks who couldn't make it. We're going to try something a little new this time relative to past events. In past events, we pretty much had an open Q&A. Tonight, we're going to ask you to submit questions via a link that you can access at givewell.org/events, E-V-E-N-T-S. And that's just to keep the questions a little more organized than they've been in the past. So if you have any questions now or throughout, go to givewell.org/events and enter your question, and then it'll pop up here and we can answer them. So before we dive in, I'm Ellie Hassenfeld. I'm GiveWell's executive director and one of GiveWell's co-founders. And then just to briefly introduce the other folks who are up here, this is Catherine Hollander. She's a research analyst who focuses on outreach. She's been with GiveWell since 2015. Josh Rosenberg, a senior research analyst who focuses a lot on GiveWell's incubation work, who's been with GiveWell since 2013. And Natalie Crispin, a senior research analyst who leads our top charities work, and she's been with GiveWell since 2009. So there you have it. Let me just give a brief introduction of what we do and some of what we'll be talking about, and then we'll move on to questions. So GiveWell's goal is to identify outstanding giving opportunities that meet our criteria and then publish a short list of recommended charities that we recommend to donors. We are trying to identify the groups that accomplish as much good as possible, subject to our criteria. We're really trying to focus on how much impact are the groups having with the amount of funding that they receive. So how many lives do they save, or how much do they reduce poverty, or how much do they improve lives for every dollar that's donated? We're really focused on finding that short list of top charities rather than trying to evaluate every single organization. So the groups that we focus on and evaluate are ones that we think are most likely to be the groups we recommend most strongly. Just very briefly to describe the groups that we recommend, three of our top charities focus on programs that are aimed at reducing child mortality. Two of the groups focus on malaria-oriented programs. Another group, Helen Keller International, provides vitamin A supplementation. It provides a vitamin A to children under the age of 5 twice a year, and that has a significant reduction on child mortality. Four of the groups that we recommend run deworming programs, and so this is treating parasitic infections that are extremely common in the developing world, and we recommend deworming programs because of the possibility that they may lead to significant increases in people's physical or cognitive development in ways that lead to increased incomes as adults. The two final groups on our list are both directly aimed at increasing beneficiaries' incomes so that they have more money to buy the things that they want. One is called Give Directly. They just transfer cash directly to very poor people in the developing world. The other is also a new addition to our list. They're called No Lean Season. And they provide a small interest-free loan to people who live in rural areas of Bangladesh to incentivize them to migrate during the time of year when there's limited agricultural work where they live. And it aims to incentivize them to migrate to areas that have more job opportunities during this lean season. And so they're the sort of second new addition to our list this year. I think probably a lot of you here know this, but all the details of the work that we do are available on our website. So if there are things that we talk about tonight that you want to get a lot more information on, odds are you can find it on GiveWell's website. That said, don't hesitate to ask questions. The reason we hold these events is to help clarify things or help you find things that you might not have found on your own. So please feel free to submit, even very basic seeming questions. And of course, if you, end up with questions after the event, you can email us at info@givewell.org. We're happy to answer and talk. And then certainly during the break after the event here, all four of us will stick around, and we're happy to chat and answer questions one-on-one if that's helpful. So, yeah, I mean, just to start in, I mean, I think, you know, one question that, you know, we get a lot and I think is good to keep in mind in thinking about our top charities is, you know, what's the process we use? You know, how does GiveWell identify the small set of charities it considers? And then what's the process we go through to evaluate those charities? So Josh, maybe you could take a crack at that.
Sure. Yeah, so there's a gigantic number of programs and charities that we could potentially look at, and so we need to narrow those down in some way to figure out which ones we want to go much more deep on and ultimately recommend. And so the largest filter in our process is at the program level. So I'll give, as an example, Helen Keller International's Vitamin A Supplementation Program and how we came to recommend that. So first we look for independent evidence of the effectiveness and cost effectiveness of the program that a charity runs. So in this case, that's vitamin A supplementation. And we determine whether the evidence is strong, then we compare that to our existing top charity recommendations and say, you know, does this seem like something that could stack up and that we could imagine donors wanting to give to instead of our existing organizations? And so if a program is promising enough, then we reach out to charities that are working on that program. So we wouldn't just reach out to Helen Keller International. We'd also reach out to any other charity that is working on vitamin A supplementation to find the strongest charities working on that program. And once we get to that stage, we go deep with the charities in understanding the monitoring and evaluation that they do to see whether they're having similar effects to what was achieved in studies of the program. And ultimately, decide whether to recommend them as a top charity, as a standout charity, which is kind of our second tier, or not to recommend them as either a top or a standout.
Cool. That's great. And then, I mentioned, you know, we have these nine top charities, they sort of have different strengths and weaknesses, you know, across the main criteria that GiveWell is looking at. So Natalie, maybe you could just talk a little bit about like the main factors that we're weighing when we decide what to recommend to donors.
Sure. So we just published a very long blog post with all of our recommendations for the year, and there's a big table that has all the details if you want to get into the specifics by charity. But at a high level, some of the factors that we care most about. So the top one is cost effectiveness. This is something that we put a lot of effort in trying to understand what you get for your dollar by giving to different organizations. Is a really important factor in our process. It's not decisive. There's a lot of uncertainty that goes into this model, and we don't take the results at face value. But we do see a wide enough variation that we do care about the results. And so, for example, we believe that the Deworm the World initiative is about 12 times as cost effective as what we use as the baseline of cash transfers. And so that seems like a real meaningful difference to us. Some of the other factors that we think about and see variation across organizations are how much we know about the organization. So GiveWell is 10 years old now. Some of the organizations we've been following almost that entire time, and we feel like we really have a very deep knowledge of them. Some of the other organizations we've added more recently, Ellie mentioned two this year, we added three last year, and those we have spent dozens or hundreds of hours on have a pretty deep knowledge of, but still think that we could learn additional things in the next few years that could change our mind in various ways. And so we try to be a little more conservative in those cases when allocating funding. And some of the other things that we think about are ease of communication with an organization. So we really want to be able to learn over time from organizations, and some are easier to learn from than others. And then finally, monitoring and the likelihood of detecting problems if they exist. And so some organizations we feel really confident will detect problems. For example, GiveDirectly has uncovered several cases of their staff stealing relatively small amounts of funding, but in the scheme of how much they've given out, but has publicized that and written about how they've discovered those cases. And then others, we think you know, still have strong monitoring in the scheme of all top charities. Like all of our, that's a important criteria for our top charities, but we're less confident that we would find out about problems, and so there is a spectrum across top charities.
Yeah, and so to be clear, I mean, in GiveDirectly's case, we see that as a major positive about the organization, that you know, we expect that virtually every organization has some degree of failure or even fraud, and the fact that they are finding it and reporting on it gives us more confidence than if we are not hearing about that at all. We've been talking a lot about, you know, the process we follow, the criteria that we use. So one of the questions that I know a lot of that people have is like, how many charities did we evaluate, or like has GiveWell evaluated, that have, you know, led to the recommendations that we have? Does one of you want to take a crack at that?
I can try. So I mean, it's not a straightforward question to answer, because we've looked at different at slices of charities at different points in time, at different levels of depth. So earlier in our history, we went through hundreds of websites of charities looking for the types of evidence that we consider meaningful. At other stages, we've focused in on particular programs and said, what are all the organizations working on vaccination, and what are they doing, and what is the evidence that they're vaccinating additional children? So, you know, I would certainly say it's in the hundreds, if not thousands, but in terms of the number of organizations, we've sort of like tiered it. So there's like ones we've done very shallow on, and then organizations that we've gone deeper on. And so as in terms of organizations that we've done very deep analysis of, we generally just don't get to that stage of the process unless they're very promising and very likely to become a top charity.
Yeah, and so to add to that a little bit, you know, I mentioned that in our process, the first big filter is the program that a charity is working on. So, you know, we've looked at the evidence base for over 100 programs to figure out whether we should find charities that are working on those programs. So that's another way to slice it, is, you know, that we have this list of priority programs on our website, and I don't know the exact number, that there may be around 20 of those, but I think that's out of a much larger, you know, in the hundreds of numbers of programs that we've considered.
Yeah, and I'd say at a high level, our goal is to cast the net as wide as we can at the early stage, and then, you know, imagine a funnel that, you know, kind of tries to reduce the number of charities or programs that we're considering. So I'd say I've personally looked at like thousands of charities' tax forms to get a very basic sense of what they do. Certainly like hundreds and hundreds of charities' websites to see what sort of information they make available. And then we're trying to only focus in on the ones that seem most promising. So just want to turn to a slightly different consideration now, which is, you know, it's near the end of the year. A lot of folks are thinking about where they're going to donate. Maybe some of you are trying to decide what you'll do this year. So we published a blog post where we laid out our recommendations. We talked a little bit about what we expect other donors to do. But Kat, maybe you could just describe a bit like what you see as the, you know, kind of some of the key considerations for donors in making their year-end giving decisions.
Yeah, sure. So as Ellie and Natalie mentioned, you know, we have 9 top charities now. We think all 9 of them are excellent and need additional funding or can use additional donations to, you know, do good in the world. So we are excited for donors to support any of the 9 charities that we recommend. Within the list of 9, GiveWell ourselves looks at the different funding that they all need and sort of ranks that according to how high a priority we think it is that funding gap gets filled. And a few different factors go into thinking about that. The cost effectiveness of the charity's work, sort of the pressingness of the need and what it enables the charity to do. And so we rank the lists based on sort of our view of what the highest priority needs are among our 9 top charities. And we come up with a sort of bottom line recommendation for donors. One is that if you hear us tonight and think like, yeah, I'm happy to defer to what they think, you know, it seems like they thought a lot about it, you can give to us and we'll re-grant it to our top charities according to where we think the greatest need is. Or you can follow what we call our current recommended allocation, which is sort of the highest priority funding gap that we see as currently unfilled. And right now that recommendation is to give 70% of your donation to the Against Malaria Foundation and 30% to the Schistosomiasis Control Initiative, which is one of the deworming charities. Now, all of this relies on GiveWell staff's own inputs into our cost effectiveness model, some of which are shaped by fairly subjective personal values. And so what I'm referring to there is the fact that, as Ellie mentioned, our top charities don't all have the same outcome. So not all of our top charities avert deaths. Some of them increase incomes or, increase consumption. And so what we do in our cost effectiveness model to come up with our list of ranked funding gaps is we say, okay, well, how would we trade off a year of healthy life, say, for a year of increased income? And that input shapes our bottom line cost effectiveness numbers that we get out of our cost effectiveness model, and that shapes that recommendation that I mentioned that we have. And so if you personally feel very strongly that you want to, avert a child's death from malaria more than you are interested in giving someone a cash transfer, that might lead you to want to support the Against Malaria Foundation for that reason. And so that's another consideration that you might want to make as a donor, especially now that we have 9 top charities that are working on fairly different programs. And if you're interested in digging in and doing the cost effectiveness analysis yourself, there is a copy of our model on our website. You can edit it, you can put in your own values and sort of see what your own sort of relative cost effectiveness of the charities that we recommend would be based on your own personal values.
And the reason why we recommend AMF and or Against Malaria Foundation and Cystomyces Control Initiative on the margin is that we have made a significant recommendation to Good Ventures, the foundation we work closely with, and they have provided significant funding for each of our top charities. And so this is where we think the next funding will do the most good.
Yeah, so these like moral value judgments, or we call them moral weights, like they end up playing a pretty big role in the recommendations that GiveWell makes. And I think that it's sort of necessary because some charities save lives and others try to increase incomes. And so, Josh, maybe it'd be worth just talking a little bit about, what we do, but also like what else is out there? Like, what have we relied on? What could we rely on? And maybe like any what are we trying to do to get like better information about these questions?
Sure. Yeah. So we have a recent blog post on our website where we go into a lot more detail about, how we approach the moral weights process and how other actors have done that. But I can give a brief overview of what we've done there. So, a couple of the big trade-offs that we face are, one is how much do you value increasing income versus improving health? And a second one is how much do you value averting deaths of older individuals versus young children? And so we tried to look at what other actors had done on those two questions. And on the question of, increasing income versus improving health, there's a fairly common way of approaching this that is often used in government policies, which is called the value of a statistical life. And so what they do is they do empirical analyses of things like how much someone needs to be paid to take a job that has a 1% higher risk of mortality. Or in some situations, they'll directly ask people how much they'd be willing to pay to reduce their risk of mortality by a certain proportion. And they then get, a sort of dollar value of how much someone values a life. And so in the U.S. context, this is often in the range of $3 million to $7 million. And groups like the Environmental Protection Agency, when they're thinking about, we could reduce this pollution, but it'd be very expensive, ask questions like, well, how many lives would that save? And does the cost of reducing the pollution, is it worth it given, the value of a statistical life? So we have compared sort of the weights that we use to those sorts of analyses, and I would say that they're broadly similar. So we tried to do sort of a sensitivity check on our analysis to say, if we just took the assumptions of what other actors had done, how much would that change our results? And we saw that it didn't really change our results very much. But the actual process that we go through for deciding on our moral weights is just that we ask staff members to think about the trade-offs and to, take into account what other people have done, but also decide for themselves whether they, would ultimately trade off differently between these things. And we also have a variety of research that we're trying to do because we feel like these sorts of questions are not discussed as much as they should be. And in particular, we really don't have great information from low-income contexts about how much people value health versus income. You could imagine that it's quite different if you're, very just living, you know, at the subsistence level, maybe you would really value any amount of income more than a longer life at that level. And we just don't really have the information to say whether that's the case. But so we're working with a group called ID Insight, which we'll probably talk more about, to try to survey beneficiaries of our charities about how they would make those trade-offs.
So one question that we got that Natalie, I think maybe you should tackle is we added two new top charities to our list this year. What changed in 2017 that caused us to add those two groups to the list this year, relative to where we were at the end of 2016?
Right. So one of the new top charities is Helen Keller International for their vitamin A supplementation program. And vitamin A supplementation has been on our radar for quite a while. It's a program that has been studied in many randomized controlled trials, and those trials have been around a long time. They were conducted in the 80s and 90s. But there was also a more recent trial called the DEVTA trial that did not find an effect of vitamin A on child mortality. And the previous trials had found a large effect, and averaging about 25%. So it's taken us, while we've been very interested in this program for a while, it's taken us quite a bit of time to sort through that that discrepancy between the older evidence and the new evidence, and figure out what we thought about it. So in the last couple of years, we finally came to the conclusion that we thought that the evidence overall was strong enough to support this program. It also was the case that, and we wrote about this on our blog a while ago, that it's a really cheap program, and so for a long time it seemed like there really wasn't funding needs for it, that governments and major funders were taking care of it. In the last couple of years, the Canadian government, which was funding it at a large scale, changed their priorities somewhat and stopped funding HKI and started funding in slightly different way. We don't think this was a result of not believing in HKI's performance, but just sort of internal changes. And so for the first time that we're aware of in a while, there was a major funding gap for vitamin A. And then finally, it's been a goal of ours for a while to figure out how to engage with these larger, complex organizations that are running multiple program types, and figure out how to really connect with them and get them to understand what we're doing and find the right programs within those organizations to evaluate. And so one of our research analysts, Chelsea, started focusing this full time for most of her time this year, and just talking to a lot of these big organizations. And she connected again with HKI and helped them through our process. So I think those were the main reasons with HKI. With No Lean Season, they're a very new program. They're actually the first organization that we've recommended out of our incubation grants program, where one of the things we do with that program is fund early stage organizations to try to build up their track record and provide us with the information that could make them a top charity. And so they've been expanding their scale, and this was the first year where they really had the information that would allow them to be a top charity. So it was our first opportunity there, and we're really excited that program has now yielded an actual top charity.
Yeah, and so I think like one interesting theme across both No Lean Season and Helen Keller International is I think in both cases, we have new top charities because of like proactive decisions we made over the last few years to change how we were allocating, how we were running the GiveWell research process. In No Lean Season's case, we made this active effort to start this incubation program to support the development of future top charities. It took a long time to get a group all the way through. We had some groups that didn't make it all the way through, but No Lean Season did. And then with Helen Keller International, GiveWell sort of makes a challenging proposition to charities. You know, we have a unique funding model. It's hard for organizations to understand. I think they perceive some risk of engaging with us because we're trying to write so much on our website. And we realized over the past few years, as our money that we were directing to charities had grown, it was surprising that more groups weren't trying to work with GiveWell with the possibility of getting that funding. And really like one of the main theories we had for what could be going wrong was that organizations didn't have a good understanding of what we were offering, what our value added was. And Helen Keller International, I think, is a really good illustration of this effort that maybe a leader, I don't know if she's here, Chelsea, put into engaging with organizations, led to this group that then we could take all the way through the process and could be recommended. And that was the sort of engagement that just wasn't possible when GiveWell was a lot smaller in the past. One high-level thing that I think is just worth talking about a bit, because we've been focused very much on our research process, which we have a lot of questions about, we can keep talking about, is just, there's also kind of a more general strategic shift at GiveWell recently. So, GiveWell's impact is basically a function of the quality of the research we do, and how much money we influence donors, how much they move from one place to another, and how much better one option is than where the other ones might have given. But then also, obviously, that aggregate pool of funding that we're influencing is a big measure of how effective we are at the work we're doing. And so in the past, we've really focused most of our energy on research, but we're making outreach a much more proactive priority. And when I say outreach, I mean trying to raise more funding for our recommended charities. So Kat, maybe you could just talk a little bit about why that's changed and some of the things we're thinking about doing about increased outreach.
Yeah, so outreach has become a major organizational priority this year. And one of the reasons for that was that, there were a couple reasons. One is that we felt that, in year 10 of GiveWell, we had spent a lot of time focusing on the research product and we felt that it was quite mature. And also that we were identifying more funding opportunities than we expected to fill with our existing donor base and donor growth. So we thought that there were high-value funding opportunities that we were going to identify that would not get donations unless we were to somehow increase the amount of money that was going to top charities relative to the trajectory that we were on. And so this year has really been kind of experimentation and strategy setting within outreach. We've focused a lot within sort of three different buckets of outreach. The first is sort of traditional nonprofit fundraising work. So thinking about things like how should we improve events and talks and understand why people give through GiveWell and if they stop giving through GiveWell, why that is. So really just kind of better understanding our donor base and thinking about how we can better serve the community of people who use our research. The second category that we've been thinking about is marketing. So if you're a podcast listener, you might have heard kind of our biggest experiment in this space, which was running some podcasts initially in February as a trial run on The Weeds, Vox podcast, and 538's Politics podcast, and then also a year-long run on Rationally Speaking, Julia Galef's podcast. And so the initial test that we did in February we thought was surprisingly good. We were able to track donations from people who said, I gave to you because I heard about you on this podcast or through this podcast ad, such that we decided to run a whole bunch more ads all through giving season. So if you listen to any of those podcasts now, you're probably hearing ads for GiveWell. And that was the result of some experimentation we did earlier this year on marketing. And that's kind of one of the things that we've done. We've done many other smaller things, so maybe Ellie will want to highlight some of the other ones, but that's kind of a big one in that category. And then the third category that I just quickly highlight for outreach is thinking about our media outreach. So many donors find GiveWell through news coverage, and we are curious whether there are things that we could do to also improve our media coverage, since that's been a major source of referrals for GiveWell in the past. So those are some of the kind of very high level areas that we're looking at for our outreach. And I think we're still very much figuring out what works based on these kind of initial experiments that we're doing, but certainly planning to keep focusing on it going forward.
Yeah, and so just with the like podcast experiment, We, when people donate through our website, they can say where they heard about GiveWell. And so we're just directly measuring the donations to our recommended charities that people report. And they say, I heard about this on 538 Politics podcast or The Weeds, the Vox podcast. Then I guess that even then, like that's some subset of all the people who are donating, because not everyone fills out the form or not everyone donates through our website, but we can just sort of directly measure those donations to see what impact the advertising is having. Kind of a key input into our process is looking for effective interventions. So Josh, maybe you could talk a bit about like what's our process for sourcing effective interventions? You know, where do we go about, like, where are we getting them from? Like academia, other places, you know, what happens?
Yeah, so I'd say we have a variety of ways of sourcing interventions. You know, one major thing that we do is we do try to keep up on the newest literature in major journals in, you know, economics and global health, and follow all the new systematic reviews from groups like the Cochrane Collaboration and other groups that do systematic reviews to figure out whether there are, you know, programs that we should be considering that now have a lot of evidence on them. At the same time, we also have an active process of thinking about where the most likely, most cost-effective opportunities are likely to come from, and are, you know, looking into those. So, you know, one example of that is that as the funding gaps in our existing charities have grown, and we feel that, you know, there's a lot of potential funding gap that could be filled at, you know, our existing cost effectiveness levels, we've started to look at or think about, you know, what could we find that might be substantially more cost effective than our existing charities. And that's led us to look into policy areas where, you know, perhaps a small amount of donor funding could affect what a government does, which affects a gigantic amount of funding and a very large number of people. And so, you know, I think the relative value of those kinds of opportunities has gone up. And as we've seen that, we've sort of actively prioritized thinking about, well, what are the most likely policy areas that we could look at? And so a couple of early examples that we've looked at are, you know, tobacco taxation, lead poisoning. And we actually made a grant to a group that is trying to reduce the use of pesticides that are used as part of suicide for, you know, agricultural workers in certain areas. So yeah, it's a mix of sort of a passive and active process that leads us to sort of find different programs.
And you know, and so the sort of goal that we have with GiveWell's like research program generally right now is, on one hand, you know, we're keeping up to date with the groups that we've recommended in the past, and there's really like two big reasons for that. You know, one is they are some of the most likely groups to end up on our top charities list the following year. We really want to know whether or not they belong there, and so we follow their progress every year to find out and figure out whether they continue to belong. You know, we also learn a lot from following up with the groups because, you know, we had some expectation about how funding them would play out, and then by following up, I think we improve our research process because we learn more about what they do and don't do effectively, or where, you know, we're surprised by some of the work they do. So that's one big bucket. You know, another big bucket is looking for more groups that are, you know, I'd say similarly promising to the groups that we're recommending today. So, you know, other groups that are in some sense, you know, about as strong on our core criteria as our other recommended charities. And, you know, we just think it's going to be great for the world if organizations that are excellent on those criteria are rewarded with funding. And so, you know, we want to find more that are at that same level. And then finally, the third goal, which Josh is talking about, is looking for the opportunities that could be significantly more cost effective than the types of groups that we've recommended to date. And, you know, our guess is that the most likely way that we'll find something that is substantially more cost effective is a group that is getting significantly more leverage in using funding than direct delivery groups. So a group that you know, works directly with the developing country government on program implementation. And, you know, we have one example like this right now. The Deworm the World Initiative in India is not the primary implementer of deworming programs. Instead, you know, their primary focus is, or was, encouraging the state governments and then the central government to take on deworming, and then providing technical assistance to enable them, the governments, to implement those programs effectively. And so the, you know, the cost that philanthropy bears relative to the Indian government is extremely low in India for its deworming programs. You know, we talked a lot about our criteria. So Natalie, I think like one good important question is just, you know, we talked about room for more funding, and, you know, how much funding different charities can absorb. So, like, how do we figure that out? Like, how do you go about deciding what an organization's, you know, room for more funding is?
Right, so this is an important part of our process, and we update this every year for each top charity to understand what are the how much they could use in total. At what point would you want to stop funding that organization and say that they can't use additional funding effectively? But also, what would they use funding at? How would they prioritize their additional funding? And what we can think about sort of the relative promisingness and cost effectiveness at different levels of funding. So the way we go about that is mostly just a series of conversations with the organization and looking at their financial documents. So we're trying to understand what funding they have available to apply to the opportunities that they could fund in the future, what funding might they expect from other donors, and we ask them, what is your ideal budget over the next 2 to 3 years? What do you want to spend money on if funding was not the bottleneck to you doing more work? And so an organization we'll look at all the financial information we'll project revenue in the future based on past revenue and look at the available funding, but then we'll also think about like how, when they tell us about their opportunities, how likely is it that they'll actually be able to take up those opportunities versus running into some other sort of bottleneck that some government won't decide to sign on to the project, or there'll be a lack of drug supply, or some reason other than additional donor funding that they could be able to actually take those up, and we take that into account as well.
Yeah, and so a couple of examples of where this has mattered for, you know, our top charities this year. I think one example is the Helen Keller International Program on Vitamin A Supplementation. Recommended an amount of funding that we believe would largely fill the gap for causing more vitamin A campaigns to happen. So because of the factors that Natalie mentioned with, you know, the Canadian government providing less funding for this work, we saw some clear opportunities where it seemed like more money would cause the campaigns to happen. But there was a much larger level of funding where they said, you know, we could use this funding to increase the coverage rates in campaigns that we expect to happen, but that with our sort of technical assistance and consulting work, we can improve the coverage rates. And so that piece we hadn't done as much analysis of and weren't yet confident of the cost effectiveness of that kind of more complex activity. The room for more funding, you know, the sort of marginal cost effectiveness of giving for that kind of opportunity might be quite different from just paying for campaigns to happen. And then the second way that this can matter is, looking at the burden of different diseases in different places. So, for example, with deworming charities, different countries can have very different levels of sort of intensity of worm infections. And so we try to think about that when we're doing our cost effectiveness analysis and say, you know, what's the best use of you know, additional dollars given the burdens that exist.
Cool. All right, so just a schedule, like a time note, we've got 10 minutes left. There's a ton of like really awesome questions here, and unfortunately we're not gonna be able to answer all of them. Maybe like submit your question 3 times in a row if you really need it to be answered right now, because we don't have any other system for voting. So I think what I'm gonna try to do is ask the ones that seem hardest, and we'll try to focus on those. So if you have the really hard one that you've been holding back on, now is the time to submit it. We'll do our best here, but this is great. Thank you for all the amazing questions. So I don't know who wants to tackle this one, but it's going to be, what would you say is the most substantive criticism or feedback that GiveWell has gotten about our methodology? That's the hardest one on the list right now.
I think you probably have the most history of substantive criticism and feedback.
Sure. So that's a great question. I think the single, I'd say, like, most substantive criticism is that, you know, GiveWell does focus on the programs that are more easily measurable. And that means that we, like, have less focus, or it's very challenging for us to focus on organizations that could have significant impact, but are just, you know, there's no way to measure them. To give some examples, a charity that fits very well into GiveWell's worldview is the Against Malaria Foundation. Like, you give them money, they look for places where people need malaria nets but don't have them, and then they go buy the nets, work with people to deliver the nets to the folks who need them, and then monitor to make sure that they're received. It's like they're filling this very discreet, gap in what's being provided. You know, on the other hand, you know, imagine a group that's trying to increase coverage of, okay, so there's a, and this will still be like in the health world, just to kind of show how challenging this is, like increased coverage of, you know, zinc and oral rehydration therapy. Oral rehydration therapy is treatment for diarrhea. Diarrhea is one of the leading killers of young children in the developing world. And, you know, this treatment is so common and so well known that if you're a charity, it doesn't make sense to go out and purchase what's called zinc ORS and then just hand it out to folks in their houses. Like, they know about it, they can already access it in local pharmacies or through government health facilities. You know, they might even be willing to pay something for it. And so, like, understanding the like the crucial bottleneck that's preventing that program from having full coverage is really challenging. And so when, you know, we look at groups that are trying to do, you know, even that sort of program, you know, they tend to be working with governments, working with the private sector, working with suppliers to lower prices, and trying to, at a very holistic level, increase the consistent effective use of, you know, oral rehydration therapy. And, you know, even that, you know, I think GiveWell would potentially be in a position to assess that sort of program. You know, we could, but it is much more challenging for that charity to demonstrate. You know, never mind the sorts of charitable programs that someone could give to where, you know, you have very little ability to measure the effects of the program that you support. I mean, GiveWell itself, in a sense, is sort of an entity like that. But, you know, other things like, you know, general advocacy, giving in response to the U.S. elections, you know, these are things where it's going to be very challenging to measure that. And these are really outside the scope of what GiveWell does. So I could list many more examples of where it's challenging. So how do we think about this criticism? I mean, I think first, the, you know, what's crucial is that, you know, we're trying to fill a very specific place, like in the ecosystem of donors and organizations. You know, we're really trying to focus on what can be explicitly articulated on our website as the case for giving somewhere. You know, we're trying to push the boundaries of what can be measured as far as we can, but then ultimately we don't want people following GiveWell's research to ultimately just be, you know, trusting some person because they say this organization is good. Instead, we want you to be able to understand the full case, like all of the details. And you can read footnote 171 in our AMF review about, you know, what we found with their activities. And, you know, that's really part of what GiveWell's value added is. You know, we wrote a blog post about whether GiveWell's top charities are the best charities for every donor. And we don't think they are the best charities for every single donor. We think they're, you know, probably the best for most people who don't have the time to do a ton of research and figure out where to give, or don't have someone else that they trust to do that for them. But, you know, for others that spend, you know, hundreds of hours of years doing research, you certainly could find things that are better than GiveWell's top charities, or at least we wouldn't be shocked if you could. That's not inconsistent with, like, what we believe about the world. And then separately, we're trying to do everything we can to, you know, push ourselves to incorporate more into our model and subject more ideas and interventions to our criteria. So, you know, some of the work that we've been talking about with a focus on advocacy to governments, you know, it's definitely harder to measure than a malaria net delivery program, but we're working to try to incorporate that because, you know, we just want to take this general philosophy, which is measure what can be measured, and then clearly and transparently articulate the case for why we're recommending what we are, and then put that out there, and that is the basis for our recommendations. All right, now I need to. I think like two sort of like related questions that come up a lot are, you know, how do we expect GiveWell to grow? Like, how will we expand the work that we do? And then what would sort of a GiveWell that was like three times the size look like, and what was a GiveWell that was, you know, much smaller look like? Josh or Natalie, maybe, did one of you, like, how do you think GiveWell is going to expand over the next several years?
Yeah, so I can talk a little bit about, you know, how we'll expand. So I think there's a large number of domains where we haven't done as much deep analysis. So there's both the, you know, potentially more cost-effective stuff that we've been talking about, like policy, but there's a large number of sort of direct delivery type domains that we've taken, you know, small looks at in the past, but just haven't gone in depth. So, you know, a few examples, you know, family planning education, agriculture, nutrition. These are all, you know, very large areas of charity that we are assessing more carefully right now, and expect to have reports on both family planning and education up on our website soon. So I think that's one major way that we'll expand, is just having views about a much larger number of areas. You know, I think we focus first on sort of global health and some of these development programs because they had strong evidence behind them. But we're now, you know, reaching out into other areas where previously we didn't see as strong evidence, and trying to understand the you know, cost effectiveness of those activities. And yeah, so now maybe you do want to talk a little bit about the sort of staff growth type question.
Sure. So I think I have a better idea of what it would look like smaller than bigger. I think smaller, we would keep up with our current top charities. We wouldn't answer all of the questions there. We wouldn't add many new top charities as quickly, and we probably wouldn't do very much on the incubation grants work, where we're trying to fund the work that would lead to new top charities in the future. I think those are the things that would have to go by the wayside in that scenario. In a much larger GiveWell, I mean, there's tons of research questions that we wish we could answer and that we don't get to as quickly as we'd like. The problem is, I don't think right now at the current margin, that funding is the major constraint to growing. It's more finding the right people and training them, and that takes a lot of current staff capacity. And so that's why we're not growing very quickly at the moment, although we are always interested in hiring talented people. So, but yeah, I guess we've talked a lot about some of the research questions that we'd like to be getting to quicker. The policy work, I think, is a big one. We could do more with incubation grants, and there, I think, funding is a constraint. We could definitely be looking at more existing organizations more quickly. We have sort of we have put somewhat of the brakes on that to not exceed our capacity, and so we just get to that more quickly. Answer more of the questions about our cost effectiveness analysis that we'd like to be shored up, and which there's still a lot of uncertainty in, and we think that more research could help. So, yeah, I guess those are the things that come to mind.
And I might add on outreach quickly, too, is that I mentioned we're very early, so we don't know what GiveWell's outreach will look like, but that is certainly another area of GiveWell that, you know, has grown internally in terms of the staff capacity that we have dedicated to outreach now. You know, currently it's grown a lot even in the last year. But I think, you know, going forward, the size of the outreach team is another thing that, you know, may well expand potentially significantly, depending on how initial work goes and what we see as the most effective ways forward.
Yeah, so I think, like, the key things that would lead GiveWell to be significantly larger than it is today would probably be we are able to succeed at hiring people, and that driving more money to our recommendations. You know, I certainly can imagine a GiveWell that has a huge like growth and marketing team that's very successful at raising money for our recommendations. And then on the flip side, tiny GiveWell, so 5-person GiveWell, would happen if, you know, after more research, we really can't find more top charities, and we're not able to effectively hire people who can direct more money to our recommendations. And then I think you have sort of like maintenance level GiveWell, which is staying up to date on our current top charities, but not actively finding more because we've failed to do that. All right, so we're gonna, one final question for Catherine, and then we're gonna wrap up. So just a donation oriented question. Do you think it's better for people to give, you know, consistently every month, or, you know, give just like one time at the end of the year? Like, what are the key considerations there?
Sure. So the key consideration when thinking about how often to give is to give regularly. And regularly could be monthly, could be yearly, could be another schedule, could be, you know, every other year. And the most important thing is just communicating your plans to charities, since it really helps them plan their budgets. If they know that you're a monthly donor or an annual donor, they can kind of work that into their expectations for when they'll be receiving funding. And, you know, we don't generally see cash flow issues, I think, at our top charities, like in the sense of, you know, you giving monthly is helping them much more than you giving, you know, the annual amount. So I think our biggest recommendation is just to give predictably and to let charities know about your plans where possible, since it really helps them.
Great. All right, well, thanks everyone for all the questions. There are literally 23 more questions that we didn't get to, yeah, which I'm very sorry about, but really appreciate your engagement. And just generally really appreciate, you know, all of your interest in the work that we do and excitement to engage in a more research-oriented discussion than maybe the standard charity event. So, you know, we really appreciate all of your engagement. And, you know, we'll be around during the break. So if you have you know, questions or a question that you really want answered, you know, feel free to come find us. We're happy to answer them. Thank you.